Well, I wanted to let people know that this second hour of the Internet Advisor, when we are preempted, as we have been by Michigan State University basketball this past Saturday, what I do, like to do, because we don't have access to your phone calls, which we love getting, and are really what this whole second hour was about, is that we do a tech roundtable with a bunch of people who are in studio here. And that includes a man who's playing a role as an engineer, as well as a member of that roundtable, Ed Riddell. Good to have you here.
Always great to be here.
Matter of fact, we'll have you talk about a help call from an old friend of ours that you handled. Karsten Thomas is with us as well.
Glad
the Chuck
to be
Norris
here.
Of security.
Yeah, that's what they say.
The Chuck Norris of security.
I love it. He's with us. But he's also with us now as a regular member of our tech roundtable. I'm glad to have you here as well. Thanks. And you'll be leading the discussion on IOMT. I have been corrected. The Internet of Medical Things, right?
Yep. There's an acronym for everything.
Got to get the alphabet soup spelled correctly. Also with us is an old friend of ours, normally talking about Internet security with him, but today we tapped his resource as a rocket scientist. Rich Steenen, good to have you here.
Good to be talking about something I know something about. Instead of guessing at, or no, I'm just trying to ferret out security. Holy cow.
Well, the nice thing about security is if you're wrong, just wait a little while and it'll change. It's like Michigan weather.
Well, guys, we normally, as I say, we'll take help calls. We're live this time. But we also will take your, if you send us an email with your question, especially for those of you who are listening to us on our affiliates throughout the state, that's the way to get your question to us. Send us an email. You can go to our website, internetadvisor.net, and then you would simply click on the Contact Us button, put your email address in there, and your question, and we will get back to you during the week and then also on the program. And that's what happened with an email we got from an old friend of ours, Ben Carpenter.
Oh, yeah. Gentleman farmer. Mm-hmm. And he writes us quite succinct and detailed messages, and he's very good at diagnosing and troubleshooting himself.
He is. He's incredible. He's in his early 80s, and he's an incredible. He's a tinkerer.
He is. And I think, if I remember, wasn't he into steam engines,
yes,
too?
Yes, steam engines as well, the steampunk stuff.
But he did upgrade all of his computers at home, or at least four of them that he admits, to Windows 10. And he keeps some online and some offline, of course, because he feels that he needs to keep some offline. But he was having difficulties with one because it just doesn't, the volume on it, coming through his speaker systems, and he has a nice set of Bose speakers, just does not come out as loudly as if some of his other systems. Hmm. And this has always plagued Windows operating systems because you have so many different pieces of software that can control the speakers. Uh-huh. Some of them don't play by the rules, and Microsoft really never has created a master volume control that'll override all that stuff. So, But one of the things you can do is you can go into, with Windows 7 and Windows XP was the, no, Windows 7, you could do this. You could go into the search and type in volume mixer, and Microsoft will bring up a control panel entry that allow you to have master volume control, web browser volume control,
oh, yes,
and stuff like that.
Seen it, yeah.
So what he was complaining about is that appeared to be gone in Windows 10. So I asked him to try it again in Windows 10, and he brought up misinterpreting my email typed text. You know how that is. You think you can include next text. He brought up the file explorer and typed in volume mixer. And what he was actually looking for was when you do that, you're looking for a file name called file or right, a volume
right,
mixer.
Right, right.
Instead of using Cortana or the Windows search feature to look for it so you could find the control panel entry. So I sent him more detailed instructions that said, use the Cortana in Windows 10, the search, and search for volume control. But you may want to also try uninstalling Java and reinstalling it, or Adobe Flash Player, because sometimes those control panel entries become disabled. You know, it really depends on what volume is missing. Is it when he's on YouTube? Is he when watching? Is it the commercials that nag you when you You know, you're trying to read an article and all of a sudden a commercial on a web page starts blaring at you. Does he really miss those? I mean, so.
Or most importantly, what's happening when he's listening to the Internet Advisor?
There you go. So bring up that volume control. And you know what? My initial email to him was to go into everything you could fathom that has a volume control, you know, CD music player, you know, and YouTube, and just crank all the volume up. And he couldn't do that. He couldn't identify what components. So then we tried the volume mixer, and then now it's to the point where uninstall Adobe and Java and try reinstalling them so that the Internet Explorer or the Microsoft Edge or the Mozilla or whatever add-ins to your browser can be repaired.
Mm, okay.
So, and that's where we left it. I haven't heard back yet from them.
All right. So that...
So it is a process. Microsoft still doesn't have a handle on master volume control.
So you would go to that little box on the bottom left hand side. You're saying
where the Cortana is, you know, where they have the little speaker and it says, Cortana, could you bring up my volume mixer? You know, or you could type it in.
How does it work? Does that work well when you speak to Cortana that way?
No, not as well as my Google Voice or
exactly,
or my iPhone.
Yeah, well, and even Siri, I find, is not as effective as the Google search. I find that I don't know if you guys have found that the Google search is so much better when you talk to it. I don't know. Richard, how about you?
I never talk to my computer. Really, I'm so old.
I don't often either.
No, neither do I. Not really. But you know what I do like? I like touching my computer. I like the ability to bring up a website.
Yes.
And while it's still loading ads, I can just swipe up. And, you know, a lot of times you have no mouse control until the ads have finished loading. That just bugs the heck out of me.
Yeah.
But if I can touch the screen with my, you know, Windows 10 and touchscreen, and I can, you know, get through it no problem. That happens with Google Chrome. It happens with my Opera. It happens with Edge. All of them. Until the ads load, I have no control to scroll down past the ads so that I can start reading my news article.
Huh. Now, I haven't faced that. I guess I have an ad blocker. I have AdBlock Plus.
Yeah, besides you're on a Mac, which doesn't have that issue. You got a touchpad. You just scroll.
Yeah, that's exactly. Although I would like
to get that in there.
Well, no, even with my touchpad, it won't let me do it.
Huh.
When I swipe the right-hand side, it still doesn't let me do it.
Don't have that issue with
it. I wish with my Mac.
That's true. No, I bet. Mm-hmm.
With my MacBook, I wish I had the ability to hit the screen. Somebody's
got audio on your...
Oh, my goodness. My computer was talking to me.
Yeah.
Siri woke up. Oh, my goodness. I got to tell you guys...
You were talking bad about her.
Yeah, no, kind of quickly. It was my phone on my wrist. Was hearing me.
Your iWatch.
My iWatch.
No, Apple doesn't call it an iWatch. They call it an Apple Watch. Otherwise, you'd be like Dustin Hoffman, as I like to watch.
That's right.
Isn't that something? Didn't he play Gardner that says, I like to watch? It was Chauncey. Oh, no, that wasn't him. That was the guy that played the Pink Panther.
Come to me. The Pink Panther guy. Yep.
Yeah. I like to watch.
Yep. I was going to say, guys, this watch has been fantastic. I'm still learning. The last program, the guys gave me the Apple Watch 3. It has been fantastic. I'm still learning all the stuff. But one of the things I'm having a fun with is talking on the phone. Because I was in the other room, and I had left my phone charging, and I was in the other room. A phone call came through, and I just hit the watch and answered the phone and had a long conversation. I think I may have talked with you,
cool.
Richard, when you were coming in.
Oh, okay.
I used the phone to talk with you. What did was the audio good?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Incredible. Amazing. Just incredible.
Peter Sellers.
That's it. All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to give a little bit of a platform here to Kasten to talk about something brand new that's coming. It's being developed. It's IOMT, the Internet of Medical Things. Have I got that right?
It's not coming. It's already here.
It's here. All right, we're going to talk about that and the consequences to us for that kind of thing. All right, all that coming back up with the Internet Advisor, and this is our Tech Roundtable throughout the rest of this hour. I want to thank Ed Riddell, my old posse member here, who's also doing the engineering of our program, doing a great job on that. Thanks, Ed. And
I'd like to say any time, but I'm not going to.
And Richard Steen is here, kind of wearing a number of hats, and good to have you on board.
Good to be here.
Part of this Tech Roundtable. Yeah. But the man of the hour right now is Kasten Thomas, who's with us, also a security expert, has his own company.
Interworks
out of Rochester. And you are a consultant there on security with some of the large organizations out there of putting together, I've heard you describe it, kind of putting together packages of resources for them.
We find all the new stuff. Yep. They're really advanced, you know, the machine learning, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, security, and you know, the technology's evolved to where you can make the information security professionals 10, 20, 30 times more effective using these tools. So we're out there scouring the horizon for what's coming next.
Excellent.
I tell people that we've institutionalized and built a process around, look, squirrel.
And, you know, it's interesting having the two of you in the studio as well, because, Rich, of course, you've been looking at cybersecurity for a long time on a macro level. And we can bring that in. But I want to talk about this. It's the new catchphrase is IoT, the Internet of Things. And, matter of fact, Mike Brennan, back in, on April the 4th, he is going to be having an entire conference that they're holding on that and at the Marriott in Troy. But what's the deal with IoT? Let's start with that and then go into IoMT and how that fits into the whole thing.
Yeah, it's the convergence of a number of technologies. I mean, we look at sensors and the ability to be able to monitor things no matter where they are. A good example of medical technology would be a sensor that would be able to monitor glucose levels in the yep. bloodstream to help diabetics monitor and adjust their medication better. It has the ability to remotely be able to provide telemetry information and other kinds of things to physicians and potentially artificial intelligence systems who can monitor and give feedback to behavioral controls. So a good example would be, let's say you've got bilateral stress on a knee implant, and you might indicate that there's going to be either failure in that knee implant or maybe the bone tissue around it. So wow. having sensors that could monitor that and talk to the iWatch or plug into the computer or Bluetooth to be able to update that data into a database that can then be monitored or send an alert to a physician or to the patient to say, you know, you really need to get in and see the physician in the next couple of days.
This is going like wildfire, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Just going bananas. But on that same level, I know that the hospitals, like I happen to go to a hospital that's St. John, which is now part of St. John Providence, now part of Ascension. And they are just, it seems like every time I go in there, and I go on, unfortunately, frequently, you know, for checkups or whatever, there's new stuff that they've got going, you know. And the nurse now walks in with a laptop. She
Absolutely.
Has a laptop, and she does all of her entry in there, my blood pressure, et cetera, temperature, blah, blah, blah. And that's immediately scored. My blood test results are immediately, boom, right there. I can ask for them when I leave. I get them. And as a matter of fact, I've now found that I can go online
right.
with some of the portals that they have.
Sure.
Well, you know, that's all great, but I'm still waiting for the day where I can, you know, carry it with me.
Right.
So if there's an emergency, I have my medical information with me that shows that I saw the doctor regularly. This is the blood pressure. This is the medication I'm on. And, well, with the watch that you have, well, we're getting to that point. Yes.
Yep.
But, you know.
But there's no portability yet.
There's no portability.
What the Health Information Portability Act was all about, and we're not there yet.
Yeah.
Well, I think with this Apple Watch, I am. I mean, it's got sensors in the bottom of it that I can go to that if I press the button, this little heart, this heart rate, it starts measuring it immediately. Now, apparently, there is also an application on my phone. It's called Health that I can go to.
That's the Apple Health app.
Yep.
And that's not so much an app as it is. It's kind of like Apple Home or the Google Home platform
yes.
where everything communicates to it. So Apple Health or the Google Health equivalent on the Android devices, gives you the ability to take the sleep monitor that you have. There are pillows and mattresses, and you can even put your phone on your bed, and it will detect what's going on. With your Apple Watch, it can look at your pulse and those other things and feed all that in. So they've built a platform where all of the data is in one place, and they've built that interchange of information so that you can take all the inputs and put it into Apple Health. And there are extensions that Apple's working with, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, probably Detroit Medical Center in Beaumont, Stanford Health. They're all getting behind this collaborative effort in order to extend the capabilities of Apple Health into more medical record kinds of data.
Yeah, because I have, matter of fact, one of the entries here, I think, is medical. It's called Medical ID. And I can create my own medical ID.
It's sort of like what I was saying.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't done it yet because I'm still trying to find all this stuff that's on here. But that's on my phone. And, you know, typical of Apple, it's all in the Apple walled garden. And matter of fact, they're being criticized for not opening it up to third parties. You think that might be eventually this medical field might be the thing that cracks that open?
Yeah, it could be. And why wouldn't they open it up just like they did with the App Store for apps? So.
Yeah.
As long as you comply with their requirements.
Right.
Yeah. The one thing that I'm just surprised that they took the plunge is the, you know, if they're monitoring all this stuff, aren't they afraid of getting sued?
Especially if they lose it. That's a HIPAA violation.
Yeah, well, they lose the thing, or what about, I wasn't notified that my blood pressure was too high. You know, and then some person has a heart attack. What about the liabilities?
The Apple acceptable use agreement on your iPhone is 92 pages. I bet they thought of that.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Well, but no, you're raising a very interesting point, and the security. So tell me, what do you think of security?
Well, it's not just a security thing. I mean, wouldn't it be great to carry our medical record around with us?
Yes.
But, you know, there are two issues. There's the security aspect, but more importantly, there's the issue of trust. If a physician gets on the information on your phone, is it accurate? Is it up to date? Have you, you know, you might be saying, I'm taking all my medication and that's being recorded in the watch or the phone, but how accurate is that? So, yeah, it's not just security. It's that level of, is the information in that medical record you're carrying around accurate?
Well, but it's a starting point.
Absolutely.
I mean, when my kids were young, I used to carry a thing, of all things, on my Palm Pilot that showed every medical visit, what the doctor said, and the prescriptions they provided.
Oh, wow.
And how old are you?
I know. And the doctors were like, I don't even have this information, you know, and I says, that's because your medical record system is so messed up. And we were talking, we were in the same office and they're like, I can't find these entries. I said, here's the date. Here's the time. Here's the prescription. Here's the doctor's name. And they, I can't find that. My son's had strep throat 4 times this year. What are you going to do about it? I don't show that. You know, it was ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And again, this was in the 90s and the 90s and 2000s, but still. Come on.
Yeah. And you were asking about security, and we've talked about the wearable devices and the remote devices, but there's a huge issue around medical devices in hospitals. That could be MRIs, infusion pumps, the other kinds of telemetry monitoring things.
Within the hospital itself. Huh?
Yeah. And that's a great concern. There are two concerns there. One, securing those devices, because conceivably a malicious hacker could take that same approach with ransomware and hold infusion pumps or refrigeration units, because there are very strict FDA compliance regulations on monitoring the temperature that drugs are kept in those refrigerators. And if you lose that information, or for some reason the network goes down and you're not able to monitor that, the hospital has to dispose of those drugs.
Whoa!
There's another thing in the nurse alarms, because the hospitals have to make quadruply sure that if a nurse alarm goes off, you know, you hear the code blues or those kinds of things in a hospital. If an alarm goes off on one of these monitoring devices, someone needs to respond.
Yes.
And as anybody who carries a phone around,
I recently spent 3 weeks in a hospital, and at night in particular.
Well, what happens if the network goes down? You know?
Oh, exactly.
And the alarm goes off. There's nobody there to hear it because the network doesn't transfer.
If a tree falls in the forest, you know. All right. We're going to come back. Cass and Thomas, Richard Steenan, Ed Rudella, myself, Foster Brown. We're going to be talking more about this IOMT, the Internet of Medical Things. Kind of mind-blowing. All the things that this entails. Back to that in just a minute here on the Internet Advisor. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. This is our Tech Roundtable, and Cassian Thomas has been leading the conversation about the Internet of Medical Things, which is a new area of concern. It's funny as, well, I shouldn't say funny, but it's been interesting as we've been delving into this, all the different electronic systems that there are in hospitals that talk to one another, and the vulnerability of those systems as well. It's almost like, I think, Rich, you did, was a little booklet on SCADA? Oh, SCADA? What's
yeah,
it called?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the cartoon SCADA and Me, right?
But SCADA and Me.
Yep.
It's like there are these systems that are running there that we are kind of invisible to us, but are still basic to the whole process. Do you have something like that in hospitals?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But let me turn the conversation to the things that are really going to blow your mind, because IoT is not just the remote devices. It's those enabling technologies around it that create just hugely tremendous things. We talked a week or two ago about 3D printing of medication. So that you can time release this. Well, you can take that same 3D printing concept and build what are called IoT ingestibles. So you actually would create something that you would swallow like a pill, and as that goes through the system, it would provide monitoring of, as an example, the gastrointestinal.
Sure, colon? Stomach?
Yeah, you know, what's the acidity level, what foreign objects might be there. And you could see capturing a pill that would record blockages in a colon, and when it passed, you'd be able to pull that data and be able to have information about what's going on in the body without doing surgery.
Rich, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a friend in Sweden who has an injectable little pin. It's like from James Bond, and it goes right between your finger and your thumb. And he happens to be an expert body tattoo artist.
Uh-huh.
So he evolved into this new world. It's called biohacks. And he injects that in there, and the next step for them is medical monitoring. But right now it's a digital token. And they use it anywhere in Sweden. You can get into the train station just by waving your hand over it. Yeah,
he's injected. It's like an RFID chip?
Exactly. Yeah, it's the
same.
Chips.
Yeah, same thing you put in the dog, you know, for
identification. Oh my goodness!
Yeah. He's got 3,000 people who've done it already.
Well, you know, there's going to be some people who will see this as the mark of the beast. You know, I mean, seriously, some people, based on their reading of the Bible, will say, "Oh, that's the mark of the beast," and you know, the end is near.
The end has always been near, but
that's true. It's around the corner.
I've got a friend who did work with some security agencies, and he holds the patent on what's called RFID dust. RFID meaning radio frequency identifier. These little microchips that you're able to track people like the dogs and such. Right. Well, he built micro RFID dust, and they would sprinkle it in secure areas or in books, and if someone took something out, they would be able to track those RFID markers in the pages that they were carrying. Because they're walking out, they would spread it on the floor in a secure area. So they could see that person walk out with the micro dust that would just transmit and go, it's this document and it's this person.
Oh, my goodness.
And the alarms would go off and they'd have all the proof that they needed.
Wow. Oh, my Lord. And that's existing now?
Yes.
Oh, he has a patent on it.
He had a patent. They produced it. He was selling it Long story I won't get into, but he was actually getting threatening emails from people because they were accusing him of setting up these RFID transmitters that would allow anybody to be tracked via satellite. Now, these little things are only going to transmit 2 or 3 feet.
Yeah.
So it's not possible to track via satellites, but you know, a lot of the tinfoil hat carriers really never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Oh my goodness. That reminds me of the in the 90s, so it'd be 1992-93 mm-hmm. when RFIDs first came out, and they were using them for freight trains, right? Tracking the freight trains.
Right.
And so at the company I worked with, EDS had an IT, you know, we didn't invent them, but we wanted to see how efficient they were. So us, a bunch of geeks, would sit in there with, we'd take one of these RFIDs, throw them on a, you know, duct tape it to a baseball and throw it as fast as we could past the scanners to see if, and then someone would be sitting there with a catch, with a catcher's mitt to see if we could, you know, how fast you could actually throw it and would it read it that quickly. And, you know, some of us could throw it 65 miles an hour, but not much more than that. And it was able to read it at 65 miles an hour.
Wow.
So
things that go on in offices.
But, but then we smashed out a window and they didn't let us do that anymore.
Now, to me, the revolution that's coming is when, so right now, most IoT devices in your home and even in hospitals first communicate to a computer over Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, and then they get out to the internet and the data is stored in the cloud. In the next year and a half to 2 years, they're going to start putting 5G chips in them, just like a cell phone. And now, that you know, cars especially, and now they'll be communicating with the cloud and whatever all the time. And everything's going to be communicating that way. It's-
and I saw an article, maybe you guys, you can put, you know, elaborate on this for me. It was saying that the shift now is going to be going from servers to the cloud. But isn't the cloud just a server someplace? What is that? And is there any significance to it?
It pretty much means you don't have to buy a server for your business or home ever again. You just spin it up in Azure or AWS or any of the other ones, and you just rent the time and the compute time.
So this is Microsoft or Amazon or Jeff Bezos has got this. He's got the servers, essentially, then.
Well, there are some really good local companies that are doing it as well. So you don't always have to go to Amazon or
Secure
Microsoft 24. Yeah, Secure 24 Online Technologies 123.
Online, yes. Well, online
I don't want
technologies.
To leave anybody out, but there there are literally
Liquid
100. Web. Yeah, there are literally at least 100 locations around town that are doing hosting, if you will.
So the significance of this is that individual companies won't have to invest in their own server farms, that they're out there in the cloud, and that is the invitation that is to use that. And you're saying, how will 5G make a difference in this?
So 5G is going to change everything because we've already had the cloud get rid of the need for your data center, right? But 5G is going to get rid of your network because now, you know, in your little corporate environment, you pay for a big T1 line to the internet, whatever.
Sure.
Or more, a lot more than that. But now everybody's going to have faster connection to the internet where all your apps are for Salesforce and Bamboo for HR and ServiceNow for problem resolution. All these applications sit in the cloud anyway, so you just go directly to the internet from your phone. Wow. You might tether your laptop in the office because it's going to be as high as they've Huawei's got tests that go up to 75 gigs on 5G.
Wow.
So, you know, by in your neighborhood, it'll be subdivided down, but you'll get 3 or 4 gigs easily.
Wow.
And now you won't need your cable provider because your television's got a 5G chip and your computers all have 5G chips. I mean, the cable provider will be the one who owns those networks.
Well, that's exactly it.
You know, money. And here I am putting on my tinfoil hat because I just worry about all these radio frequencies bouncing around in my head. And it's like, you know,
can you feel them?
One of the reasons that we have problems. Yeah, thanks. One of the reasons we have problems with the old Wi-Fi, the 2.4 gigahertz that is fast getting replaced by the 5 gigahertz, is it ran on the same frequency as microwave ovens.
Right.
So,
that's true.
And the 2.4 gig phones that we had around the house, you turn on the microwave oven and they get interference. And there's a reason that the microwaves run at 2.4 gigahertz. And that's because it's the optimal frequency, not, well, it was free from the government and they opened up that space. But the reason that no commercial entities wanted 2.4 gigahertz is because it's the optimal frequency to excite the molecular cells of a saline solution. And what is the human body a saline solution?
Oh.
Yep.
Maybe that's where global warming comes from. It could be. All the microwaves are heating up the water in the atmosphere.
Or maybe it comes from the sun.
I have a friend that's convinced that one of the things about people with dementia and Alzheimer's is, he says, everyone that I know that has experienced that has a microwave that's mounted at head height. And, and sits there and waits for that microwave to finish warming their coffee instead of on the counter.
I don't look at the microwave when it's running because it does cause cataracts. So,
because I am notorious for
being that look inside
and looking, seeing if it's working. But often I'll walk. From now on, I'm going to walk away from it.
Yeah, you are.
No kidding.
So what frequency does the 5G
network? I don't know. I was trying to think of the answer to that.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'll have to look it up.
Yep.
Yeah. So much for watching those marshmallows in the microwave when you put a marshmallow in and it expands like 100 times.
How about a match? You ever lit a match? You get these plasmoids floating around inside, and it's really cool.
I have not, but I put a mayonnaise jar that still had a little of the metal around the rim of the top.
Oh, yeah.
You got a little light show.
It was quite pretty.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you what, we're getting close to a break. And when we come on the other side, I want to talk about the issue, because both of you are involved in security. Where are we with security with this? Are we so far ahead with all this IoT and IoMT that we've got a lot of insecure communication going on? And as you said, 5G coming in. Holy mackerel. What's that going to do to our security? We're going to continue with Kasten Thomas in studio with us and Richard Steen and Ed behind the board. Myself, Foster Brown here. We're going to continue talking about the future that is here right now. Well, I got to ask my crew here, have you got your plans set for Valentine's Day?
I think we're babysitting for somebody else.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's good.
That's good.
That's very good. Yeah. Ed, how about you? Any?
I guess I'm not very romantic.
Oh, Kasten?
So I did ask my wife, what do we want to do for Valentine's Day?
Oh, yeah. At least you asked that question.
And wink, wink, she said, food's not important to me.
Oh, okay.
I'm a lucky guy.
Oh, dear. Maybe the diamonds are a girl's best friend. I don't know.
You may be meteorites.
Or meteorites.
Those sound pretty good.
My girl is my best friend.
All right. You know, I looks at the count. Oh, the 14th. What are we going to do?
You know, we might go out to dinner, but I think one of the things we're going to be doing is the following month, it'll be our 25th. Wedding anniversary.
That's right, and you're going to be going to
We're going to go to Los Angeles, and then Lost Wages,
And then Lost Wages.
Going to visit my son. He's out there doing an internship, and he called us a couple days ago. He said it was 85 degrees, and he was sweating so much. I just felt so sorry for him. It's horrible.
I'm out of it. What is Lost Wages?
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Got it. Okay.
Otherwise known as Lost Wages.
I've never heard that.
Oh, no. Well, that's a tease that's been out there for a long time. Okay, guys.
I live in a bubble.
both of you, Kasten and maybe from different perspectives, Richard, it seems almost as if technology in this particular instance has gotten way ahead of the ability to hang on to its tail and keep it safe. Am I right on that?
Yeah, completely. I've actually written about this a lot because a lot of people are saying, oh, these silly people producing all these new products have to build in security from the beginning, which is great, except that slows down the development and it costs a lot more. And why should you worry about the security of something when you don't even know if people are going to buy it? Right. So what happens is you build the new watch or the new light bulb or whatever, and you make a million of them, you sell a million of them, and then the hackers start having fun with it. And then you have to recall them all or somehow fix them.
And crowdfunding just makes that all the worse.
Yeah. Crowdfunding is creating things constantly.
Oh, that's a good how's point. That? No, tell me about that.
Well, these are companies that come up with an innovative idea. They publish it to the internet, to a crowdfunding site. And
Kickstarter.
It's like, yep, micro investing. A person can buy one of these objects for you know, a development cost, or there are places where now you can actually get stock ownership into an upstart. So with wow. that happening, people are putting money into these ventures without the oversight and without the risk assessment that's typically done for a company that is going after professional develop or professional investors.
Right. So that's how it's complicating things even more. In that sense.
To me, I've just got used to the idea, and we're just going to live with it. And it
yeah,
creates
yeah.
more business for Kasten and I. So.
Well, you know, I'll take a counterpoint to Richard, because from my perspective, securing the Internet of Things is going to be easier, because when you look at the security problems we've had, the overwhelming majority, I mean, we're talking 90-95% of the big hacks that have happened, and even the intermediate hacks, has been because of user error, because somebody opened up the wrong email,
right?
Because a system wasn't patched by an administrator, or somebody shared their password where they shouldn't. With the Internet of Things, you remove that human fallibility that has created so many hacks. So it gives us the ability, not necessarily to depend on the devices securing themselves, but being able to secure the networks around it. And using machine learning, you can monitor the networks and look for abnormal behavior and identify that very quickly. So that's my counterpoint, Richard. And
you just wish I would disagree, but I can't.
Well, you know, how many times has your smart TV actually said I have to do an update? Mine's done it three times in the last year and a half since I've owned it.
Hmm.
I don't even know when mine gets updated. I just turn it on and things look different.
No, I mean, I have a Samsung and it basically says, you know, there's an update. Would you like to do it now or wait till you go to bed and schedule a time?
Hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, that's great. Do that. I'm just wondering if my fire alarms are going to do that and my light bulbs and at some point.
They already are.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
And don't forget the other IOMT, the one that I wrote a book on, right? So the Internet of Military Things.
Oh.
These are things that are 20 years old and were never developed with the idea that somebody could attack them. And they're everywhere.
My goodness, yes, you're right.
So and we had the same problem in the electrical grid.
Yeah.
But the smart meters are coming out, and those are being secured because security, as smart meters came out, was built into those devices. And now there's some exciting things happening on the network side to prevent people from being able to get even to be able to even see those smart meters.
Well, you don't, as I listen to you now, as kind of a layperson, maybe from the perspective of most of our listeners, you don't realize all the holes that have been opened up around you for the different vectors for attacks, if you will.
And the traditional model is to let the attackers point them out to you, right? So you don't find out until after the vulnerability is exploited.
Right. Yeah. And this is a big concern also, not only for medical devices, but we're going with smart cars, you know? And so the automotive industry is seriously looking into that. They have cybersecurity experts and automotive cybersecurity experts. Just for that reason.
Yeah. What about drones and delivery drones?
Oh, yes, they're flying around. Yes.
Yeah. We saw those cool drones at the Olympics.
When they get, I mean, the ones where they have a display like Intel had?
Yeah, they flew up and they formed the Olympic circles.
Oh, and an eagle, I believe, or some sort of phoenix, probably.
Yep. Yeah.
That is astounding.
Remarkable.
These are all tiny little, they have LEDs on them, right?
Yep.
And they're all individually programmed, they're choreographed.
Right.
That is also being used by the military, am I right, in terms of both surveillance and the possibility of attack as
well? Swarming, and we saw the first drone swarm attack on a Russian base in Syria. So from 30 kilometers away, I forget if it was ISIS or the Kurds or somebody flew all these drones that they had made, which were like airplanes with electric motors on them and fans, and they had all these bombs on them, and they hit the airplanes.
Wow.
So that's first use, and it was all cobbled together.
From a house, how large were the drones? Were they?
So they had about a 2.5-foot wingspan.
Wow. So it's almost something, a consumer size.
Yeah.
It sounds like it, yeah.
And they had made them themselves.
Probably got them off eBay.
No, they weren't even off the shelf. They
just cobbled them together.
Cobbled them together, strapped some motors on
Seven-Up bottles, and yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yep. Well, my son has a 3D printer.
Yeah.
And the manufacturing facility in Eastern Europe that built it, their 3D printers are printing the 3D printers. And my son said that he can actually upgrade and build a new 3D printer to replace the one that he has that's being 3D printed by the printer he owns.
Cool. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's cool.
That sounds like
a Hall of Mirrors.
Yeah. This is the world we live in.
That's Terminator stuff.
Yep. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, how far are we away from some of the things? I know, Skynet and things like that. You begin to wonder. Oh, boy.
Oh, we're already there.
I think I need my I think I'm going to get a tin hat, all right? We'll have to get one that will have an Internet Advisor logo on it or something like that.
Just make sure it's connected to the Internet.
Well, we're going to have to look into this 5G coming up, and that's going to be an interesting topic to get into as well. Well, guys, this has been a ball. I really enjoy these tech roundtables, and it's kind of freewheeling conversations, which everybody gets to join in. Ed, thanks so much for doing a great job of engineering of this whole program. And for you folks out there who have tuned into this podcast, I hope you've enjoyed it as well. And if you'd like to subscribe to it on a regular basis, go to internetadvisor.net. And you'll find a way there with the podcast of Lincoln Inn. You can find us on iTunes. You can find the podcast usually by Monday, posted on our website. And guys, I want to thank you again, Rich, for being here. Kasten, Ed, and for all the other guests who have been here, thank you so much.